You are in touch with 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's the first day of the year, 1996. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, the robe, if you will. For 2 hours, we're going to be talking civil rights for the poor, betrayal of the homeless, and what you can do to end this situation and to essentially secure civil rights for all of us. Every Monday and Friday, we have Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, a two-hour and sometimes longer show devoted to the rights of those on the streets, under the bridges, and wherever we happen to find a place. With me in the studio is my co-host for the day, best in the business, Becky Johnson. Becky, kind of belly up to the mic here and say hi. And we also have one, if this mic is working, which...
Testing 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me, Santa Cruz?
They can hear you. Now, can they hear me? Can you hear me? Yeah, this mic is a little quieter. We have Mushroomic, and then we have, it's Coral creeping in from the rear. Ah. So we have a cast of stars today to hit you right where it matters. We've got an incoming phone call here. Let's see if that's worth taking. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Just wanted to tell you that we can hear you well.
Good. Excellent, Alan. We can hear you. Anything you want to say briefly to the audience?
Good point.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we were having a few problems earlier in the show, a minute and a half ago, worrying that our signal wasn't getting out. But we are getting out.
Yay!
We are here, yes.
96, we're still getting out.
96, and those are tricks. All right, so actually we should give you the sensitive mic. We'll do the shouting over here. Mushroomic is with us. Mushroomic is one of the notorious River Street refugees who have until noon today to hit the road, Jack. Down the road, down the...
Not planning any illegal sleeping, are you, Mushroomic?
I don't know about it. You better belly up to the mic, big
absolutely
guy. Closer, move that chair in. Let's get intimate here. Come on, big boy. We know each other.
Actually, because I knew that everything was going to go on today, I actually packed up and left yesterday. And yes, I am way, way out in the woods, and you may see me coming cruising down Route 9 on my little copper bicycle. And that's the things that we need to see.
Kiss the mic.
So,
don't blow in it.
Right.
No blowing.
So it looks to me like I'm already out of there.
So, Mushroomic, you were telling me that, in fact, Barbara Riverwoman of the River Street Refugees and Dragon's Heart Dan, hey, including, William Walker, then my notorious critic, hi there, William, all campers or friends of the campers were saying that there was an $800 anonymous donation that was slipped to the campers to enable them to hustle and find another campground. Is this true?
And I was there, and I could not believe. I came in from the town, and as I come in, and they were talking about what we're going to do, I go, where are we going to get the money? And they shouted to me, didn't you know we got an $800 donation? And I go, no, I just got here. And I tried to find out who it was from, and it's going to, I guess, stay anonymous.
It's an anomalous donation, folks. Also, however, we should be aware this does not in any way affect the fate of hundreds of other homeless people who have no legal place to sleep, thanks to the kindly closure by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as they call themselves. And we're going to be delving into that subject in particular more deeply this morning, because last Thursday, that Citizens Committee, which controls the open-air shelter property, also known as the Coral, no relation to our Coral Street Shelter.
It's a famous word.
It's a famous word. Coral is in the background. If you can't hear her, well, she'll talk louder. Maybe she'll come closer. That could be exciting.
Yeah, I do want to say something.
You got
to
get in.
Barbara.
Okay. You can't be heard at that distance, I don't think.
Oh.
So you got to get in here. Here, sit on my lap. That's right. Okay, nestle a little closer. Just kidding, folks. We don't do any
this
of that.
This probably happens the first day of the year. Okay. All this merriment, I mean, right, it's not gonna happen.
Kiss the mic.
Why does it have a knot in the cord?
Hi, everyone.
It's a knotty situation. we have an incoming call.
Well, when it's ringing, I think we should answer it.
It's Free Radio Santa Cruz, your radio.
Yeah, listen.
Oh, no. Al, this is call number two.
Yeah, listen. Okay, brain damage. Listen, well, I can hear you very
Al,
well.
Al, turn the radio down.
You could, okay. You could stay, you could be 9,000 feet away from that. I'll just take over the phone.
Okay.
You could stay 9,000 feet from that mic, and it's going to pick up.
So you can still hear.
The board, you have your dials up on the board, right?
The best thing to do is put your dials all the way up on your both mics and sit back and relax and hang out,
I'm not
and
sure
everybody can hear you.
So. Okay, well, we appreciate your input, Al, and thank you for your advice.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now back to where we are. My name's Coral, and thanks to Barbara River Woman, I have a photo board that I made, and at some time I will get with you and give it to you, because I think you would probably enjoy it the most. It's pictures of the old campground, no people up too close, except Mr. Daryl Darling, whom I told I was taking his picture. And a picture of the sign that you painted by Leo Tolstoy, and a few other pictures of the new Brighton Beach area. So whenever I can get in touch with you, I think you'd like it.
Unfortunately, Barbara does not usually listen to this show, so futile but well-intentioned proclamation there.
Heard that.
Well, what we do have to begin with is a sort of a message from one of our old cohorts, Jane Immler, from about a week ago. I hope I haven't played this message for you already, but if I have, hey, it's worth listening to again. Jane Immler is an activist whom we called Calamity Jane back in the late 80s when she was leading the charge against corrupt... what we call them, corrupt is a little strong. I guess she would say corrupt, but I certainly would say priority screwed bureaucrats, short-sighted poverty pimps, and definitely anti-homeless politicians on the city council. We have the same brew today, interestingly enough, and here it is, 1996. So it's, the more they change, the more they come back into office, kind of like the rotating... councilperson, or RoboCop Mike Rotkin, you may remember him. He's been on the air a number of times in the last 2 weeks. Recall Rotkin?
Recall
Rotkin. I hear the call for recall. Hey, well, send your cards and letters to Big Mike. And by the way, if you want to call City Council about the closure of the open-air shelter, and they'll, of course, tell you it has nothing to do with them. But in fact, Mike Rotkin has said that the open-air shelter could not reopen tomorrow because the police would close it. And guess who the police are involved with? They don't work for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I can tell you. They work for the city. And though they're not under the direct command of the city council, what the city council says and what the mayor says has a lot to do with what the police do. So if you want to stop this charade of homeless hot potato, where the Citizens Committee for the Homeless says, we can't open the shelter because the city won't let us, and the city throws back the potato and says, we can't allow that because the Citizens Committee is private property, call the city and tell them, allow the open-air shelter to be opened immediately. It's vacant. There's nothing happening on it. It's quite usable. It's not a mud pit. It's not a health hazard, at least certainly less of a health hazard than sleeping under bridges, hiding outside, and risking violence from troll busters and midnight wake-up calls from the cops. 429-3550 is the city council number, and though it's New Year's Day, you can still call in because they have a recording machine which will record you in every single one of your words. Let's hear a little bit now from, again, Jane Immler, Calamity Jane, the activist whose hunger strikes established the first cold and rainy night shelter at Cedar Street, actually motivated the purchasing of the property at River Street on which the open-air shelter now sits, with homeless monies, mind you, which has been hijacked by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and its 48-person million-dollar trailer project, Community House. We actually have a board member of the Citizens Committee of the Homeless as a co-host today. Yes, a little-known fact is that the best in the business, Becky Johnson here, is not merely a photojournalist, not merely a conspirator for homeless rights, but she's also a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Isn't that true, Becky?
That's true, and I'm a damn good rollerblader as well.
Now, there you go. Rollerbladers take note. We're going to talk to Becky about what happened, just what happened at the meeting.
Must you?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And we have another witness here. Coral was present on Thursday when the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did its thingamabob. But
words can't describe it.
It really requires a tape, which luckily I happen to have right here in my hot pocket.
Oh, my God, we have to relive this.
You're going to relive the final moments of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting. We are going to I'm going to preempt the Jane Immler tape. I promised you Jane. I'll give you Jane a little later. We're also going to be discussing Stuart Martin, the manager of the ID building, who has recently assaulted a homeless person, said that all homeless people are thieves, discriminated against and evicted homeless people.
What a guy.
He's a man for the holiday spirit in Santa Cruz. I would say Rotkin has to run a second to Stuart Martin. But Rotkin is the mayor, so I think we can expect more from Rotkin. Martin is simply the manager of the ID building, which for all of you folks who don't know, is a large building on the corner across from the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Hard to tell who to give the Scrooge Award to this year.
I was going to say, maybe we should have a roast of the most quotable city officials and et cetera.
I think so. We were actually talking about a Golden Turkey Award for First Night, and I did do a little flyering of Stuart Martin's ID building with a shout of boycott bigotry, and I guess Skidmark's Bob in his show last night picked up some of that. And was kind of roaming the mall with Phil Free, renegade musician and a busker, for those who like weird and exciting words. But here is a little something that will kind of set the tone for today's show. Every month, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Executive Board meets once a month on Thursday at 4 o'clock at Garfield Park Church. Becky, you've been on the board for what, about four months?
4 months, I think.
And you've been at most of these meetings?
Well, the last four.
And you were a little late coming to this meeting, as I remember, to my chagrin. But you did show up, and of course, what happened was we have a number of campers who are at the meeting from the Brighton State Beach River Street Refugee Clan. We had a couple of community member activists. Bob Riverman, I believe, was there. Bob Campbell, who had at one time had run several, we called him a poverty pimp on air, actually. When he called in the last show, I distinguished him by pointing out that at one time he was a well-known poverty pimp.
That goes over real big.
It does, yes. Yeah. PP, we call them. It's kind of a poo-poo, actually.
I guess I'm a poverty pimpette.
Well, I don't know. Are you getting paid to move homeless people from one place to another, or to, should we say, close down the facilities that homeless people are using? That's what Daryl Darling is getting paid to do.
Did they pay anyone to be quiet? That's what I want to know.
I don't know about that, Carl, but I know that Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau are the two chief suspects here. In fact, they're not even the suspects. They are, in fact, the culprits in the current scandal around the open-air shelter. That is a scandal which, in brief, as I've said before on the air, involves the fact that the campers, the users, the residents and tenants of the open-air shelter were verbally promised, a contract was made with them on November 29th, that they would not be told to leave that property or asked to leave that property, essentially until February. And why do I say until February? Well, the actual agreement was January 1st, they would be given a 10-day notice, or whenever the permits for the so-called community house trailer project was granted. And that now turns out to be at the earliest January 25th. So it'll be 10 days after that. That's early February. The only exception to this was if there was such a torrential rain downpour, let us say worse than last year or like last year, that it made the field truly uninhabitable. And there was a lot of discussion around this, how people would move their tents to higher ground, how they'd weatherproof their tents and put them on pallets, how those with less tent-worthy tents would be going to the armory anyway, how there'd be drains dug, how a pump would, and in fact was, acquired in case there was a temporary flooding situation. But after the first rain, Paul Merceau, in spite of his and Daryl Darling's solemn promise to the campers, closed the open-air shelter without any negotiations or discussion in blatant violation of their promise.
Robert, I think you mischaracterized it.
Go ahead, Becky.
Yes,
I'm being criticized here.
I don't think it was a solemn promise.
Oh, I see. Sort of a smirking promise, eh? Well, sort of a jovial joke. I guess you're right. You know, I stand corrected. It wasn't really a solemn promise. It was more of a side-splitting aside by Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau. Thank you for the correction, Becky. I sit corrected, actually, here.
They didn't swear in the Bible, so maybe...
No, they didn't swear in the Bible. The Bible was not involved in this, but perhaps it should be. We should. These are, after all, church... Yeah, these are church people.
Priests. No, they're priests.
They're priests. Well, Daryl Darling is has a church. All these guys have churches. You know, this is the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the Interfaith, get that, Faith Satellite Shelter Program. These are men of the cloth. we can see just what cloth they're made out of from how their promises are kept. Well, in any case, darling, cheap cloth, the emperor's new clothes type cloth, invisible cloth. So, feel free to get in here, either of you guys, to comment on this.
This isn't pertinent to this. I just want to know what conditions went with that $800 donation. I did hear that the guys did have to stick together if they wanted to use the money. What does that mean?
I think it basically was only to be used for camping at campgrounds, and that was it. I tried to say, well, can we put it into certain funds that can make its own money? And they said, no, only for that, and that's it. And because I was basically hoping on making it grow from that much money. But here's the other thing, is that the campers are trying to get together the people, the few of them do have money from SSI, to maybe they'll kick in their money, and the people who don't have any money will use that, so that maybe we can stretch this $800 so that it can last and help them to march, if possible.
Quite possibly. Again, I return to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Board of Directors meeting of last Thursday. I was kind of giving you an intro as to what the promise was that was made by Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau to the campers 2 months before, on November 29th. Actually, 1 month before, on November 29th.
Now, if you have sensitive ears or there are children present, you might want to turn the volume down.
Yes, this is an X-rated tape coming up, folks.
It's not pretty.
It contains spectacles of dignified and respectable men selling out poor people who they are paid to help. It contains a spectacle of well-established authors like Paul Lee, the author of the book The Quality of Mercy, mercilessly aborting a meeting in order to avoid the revelation of information that might be embarrassing to him or his fellows on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. You will hear the loud and raucous comments of activist Robert Norris, a notorious individual in the community.
Watch out for that guy.
He's ranting and raving. Actually, he doesn't rant and rave so much, but he does raise his voice, no question about it. You're going to be listening to the last few minutes of the Thursday monthly Citizens Committee board meeting where campers tried to bring to the attention, actually the campers had other issues, where I and another person tried to bring to the attention of the, one of them was a camper actually, Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, he tried to bring that to their attention, the issue of the lie and the broken promise that was made to the campers, which makes the Citizens Committee not only is it a stain on their conscience, not only is it a blight on their reputation, but it also is a legally actionable broken contract. So let's begin to hear the end of this meeting. And hey, meanwhile, you can always call in 427-3772 if you'd rather hear something else, like, I don't know, Happy Days or something. We could put on some elevator music for the rest of the night. No, we won't do that. Here's a little Citizens Committee for the Homeless on December 28th. Go for it. Disbanded the meeting rather than answer the question about, well, I wanted to play for him a tape that showed a promise between Paul Marceau, Daryl Darling, and the campers of a month before. It was a clear documentary record. I simply wanted to bring it to the attention of the Citizens Committee because the Citizens Committee had authorized these two men to speak and negotiate on its behalf. I'll simply now play the tape without interruption, and we'll probably play the tape again toward the end of this two-hour show
with more discussions, although Becky no doubt will have something to say
we
about
won't
that.
Bleep it out either.
No bleeps. Hang in there.
Yeah, because it takes a bad day to look at it. So we have to see it here, and you can see that later. We can't
well, how are you planning to have this trailer spent by January?
It hasn't been funded yet. Because of the CDP.
Nobody's paying for a consultant to get here to answer the question.
A consultant? Who's that?
I think it's in terms of time constraints, we have to go on this.
I think the short-term need is important. I have no idea
I think it's unlikely.
You're listening to Celia. Celia Scott, council member, is speaking now. She was on the Open Air Shelter Site Subcommittee of City Council and also has been a longtime member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. She has never spoken in favor of moving Community House or retaining the Open Air Shelter on the site where it is, however. We continue to the climactic end of this meeting.
Regardless of what I might feel as an individual, that the City of Santa Cruz is going to throw things at the campground.
I mean, the campground in the county, people could stay there for 14 days with a break and get some other opportunities, some other opportunities in the county to provide some funding. The other thing I think I need to ask you to say is that many more many of us did not know that the campground was in the closed and that people would be taken from Brighton to the campground. So I have to say that because I was upset that I didn't know about it. Me as a council member and as a board member, I don't think it's fair to somehow talk as though, and someone talking about suing the board, I mean, the fact is many board members didn't know that that was happening. It may be that the decision was within the scope of the previous action that the board had taken, but many of us didn't know it. And I don't know whether we would have seen that or not. At this point, it doesn't really matter.
So I was talking to our speakers, stand up and individually sued. And I think this was a humane action. If you're made, it may be what was taken.
You were in constant fear every day, and you still are in fear. On January 1st, we're going to have even more fear than we had before.
We're going to run a meeting. We're going to have to run it.
I'm going to see this now, and
we have to go on to our committee report because people have to leave. We have to get through our business, and I'm not going to turn to the
committee. Anyone who wants to hear, you already want a statement.
A contact was made with these people. A verbal contact was made. It's right here. It's on tape. Is your committee afraid to hear it? Is your committee afraid to hear that? Well, then listen to it, students. Show the respect to the people who came here.
Robert, you
don't show the respect to the people who came here.
For the homeless even
killed our two representatives. You want to negotiate. You want to do all. Now you're going to break up another meeting. I'm all over it. Because
that was the breakup of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting of Thursday, December 28th. So rather than hear a minute and a half segment in which their two authorized representatives made a contract with the campers of the open-air shelter and then broke it. Paul Lee broke up the meeting and sent everybody home, no doubt to get together again privately, as he often does. This used to be a favorite tactic of Paul Lee's and Paige Smith's back in the late 80s and early 90s. Daryl Darling assured me that things are different these days, that things are never done that way, but I think we can see that apparently the same old tactics are operating. Becky, you were present for at least half this meeting. Coral, you were there for part of the meeting as well. It looked to me like they didn't want to hear the tape, and they also didn't want to deal with the issue of hundreds of people essentially thrown out of a legal place to sleep on a piece of property that wasn't even going to be used for the next month. What are your readings on that?
Well, first off, anyone who thinks these board meetings are dull and boring, as you can see, we have plenty of excitement at CCH.
Yes. I think this is more the exception than the rule, however.
I don't know. The last two meetings have been pretty exciting.
Yes.
So I'm going 50-50 now. My take on it, obviously there's some sort of a deep-seated rivalry between yourself, Robert, and Dr. Paul Lee.
I want to be the head of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I've wanted that for a long time, I have to admit, yes.
Yes, and your secret strivings to become a poverty pimp yourself.
It's PP longings, we call it.
Well, I did observe that Paul Lee did seem unwilling to have you have your say at all. I assume that this arose from some rivalry that is based in the past. I've heard tell about this from others, that this has been an ongoing problem. I guess problem in the sense that there's a lot of friction and heat and smoke and not too much light. I'm really caught in a dilemma on this, because I perceive both of you as being people that have really put yourselves out a lot on issues of homelessness, and that I believe that both of you care deeply, and that it would be a great thing if you actually were working on the same side. This obviously didn't happen at this meeting. As far as you're playing the tape, I don't know if it was so much the tape as it was that they had already predetermined that your point of view and just didn't want to hear it. I thought it was unfortunate because the issue was tremendously impacting so many people, and their lives are hung in the balance, and many people showed up at this meeting, and I would rather they had Paul Lee chosen to make sure that everyone who arrived there got a chance to get their say in, and that didn't happen. This was Celia Scott's last meeting.
Celia Scott is both, as I said before, a council member and a long-term six-year board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And an attorney, yes.
She definitely was reacting very much to the Dan Hopkins lawsuit suggestion.
Yeah, interestingly enough, her reactions were not to turn to Paul Meursault and Daryl Darling and say, how could you close the shelter without conferring with the rest of us? How could you break your word? What are we going to do now? It was rather, oh, Dan, we didn't know about this, so you really can't blame us.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that, and that came out earlier in the meeting, in the part that was not on that tape, where Paul Meursault stood up and basically announced that, contrary to what some things had been printed in the Sentinel, that the decision to close the campground had been his and Rotkin's alone. The two of them had gotten together after the very first major storm and decided, without consulting any other CCH members, to close the campground. This was a big surprise to a lot of people, CCH members, at that meeting. including Paul Lee himself.
You, I think, are being naive, Becky. I don't think it was a surprise to Paul Lee at all. I think that if Paul Lee told you that it was the Citizens Committee that, or if it was the city that closed the campground, he was simply replicating the false statements that he made, repeating the false statements he made back 5 years ago when there was a similar situation. In 1991, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. They closed their campground 15 days early, claiming that it was the city and the police who were forcing them to do it. But they're the ones who have the written a letter to the police department saying, we want you to remove people on pain of trespass from our property. And with that letter on file, they then call in the police and ask that those removals happen. So, you know, your idea that somehow Lee was bamboozled or ill-informed, I think is just the sheerest naivete.
Well, he was either unaware of the situation or he out-and-out lied to me. I called him earlier in the day and talked to him and about who had made the decision to close the campground, and he told me that it wasn't CCH at all, that it was the city of Santa Cruz, Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy specifically, who had decided to shut down the campground, claiming it was a health hazard. And
it should have been closed down in the spring, which I tried to have it closed down in the spring.
A dissident view is heard from the vicious Mushroomic, a friend of Daryl Darling.
Yeah, let's talk about the...
Yeah, a friend of Daryl Darling. So I would like to say that Daryl Darling has been the only one coming back out there, except for the people who want to help the refugees, and that he's the only one showing up. And I'd like to thank Daryl for trying and being there, and I'm sorry that a lot of people yell and scream at you, but I think when it got back down to in the spring when we got there for 3 months in the back 40 with no water, no hot water, toilets overflowing, I think I should have called OSHA then. I think it's my problem and my fault for not doing that ahead of time, because I know about OSHA.
Well, That's interesting, Mushroomic, and I can commend your concerns. As far as Daryl Darling's appearing at the campground and running around schmoozing everybody to death, I have no particular word for that except a sense of nausea and distaste. I mean, he did this for weeks he met with us at the so-called duck pond meetings, making his commitments, making his statements, and you might say that perhaps he felt events overtook him. That he had to go with Paul Meursault in some sort of brotherly loyalty to his fellow employee on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. But for a guy who gets paid $20 an hour, as I understand Daryl Darling does, and for somebody who's made a commitment to people who don't have 1/100th the wealth he does or the resources to shelter themselves, I have no sympathy at all for Daryl Darling. I'm sorry, I just don't. And I think that, you know, they should fire these guys as negotiators, at least, if not as administrators, and give us somebody that will give us some straight talk, because they're obviously either unable or unwilling to keep their word. That's what happened with them. As far as this business about the campground being unsanitary, you know, it's not an OSHA standard campground, no question about it. But is it more unsanitary for people that run around illegally outside getting $168 tickets and having no legal place to be? My answer was that people did the best they could with what they had, and that this final decision to close it down had nothing to do with whether it was sanitary or unsanitary. Because it hadn't, its condition had not altered. In fact, it had improved. They had access to running water, they had access to showers, day center opened, you know, all that stuff opened next door to the open air shelter. Now what they had was they had a desire to make sure there was not a lot of protest and resistance to Community House, the 10-trailer project, which they're going to try to roll right through City Council on the second Tuesday. It's coming up, by the way, a week from tomorrow. And they're also going to try to roll it past the Planning Commission on January 25th or 26th when their hearing is. And more on that specifically and hopefully accurately as time goes on. Becky, do you want to say something here?
Regarding the condition of the campground, some of the blame for the lack of quality or sanitary or healthy conditions in the campground falls rightly on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. For instance, there were three porta potties. From according to these companies that rent these, you're supposed to have one porta potty for every 15 persons. It doesn't take a math genius to know that three porta potties are not going to serve 200 people.
So when I brought Cab down with a camera, and they saw that there was no water, they put a back sink in, they brought an extra porta potty in. Well, then we had four. Well, mm-hmm. That if you put 4 times 15, you still don't have
get
even
60.
Close. Right, exactly. So I think there's still some. I just looked downtown, and there's porta potties all over the place, you know, and they're locked up. You know, it's like somebody can afford to do all this, but afford it for us, I guess not.
It's the same story that was angrily brought out at the meeting, the question of tents. There's part of this, most of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board meeting you don't hear because it was 2 hours long. You heard the last 10 or 15 minutes. But some members said, look, if you can build, if the downtown earthquake can be emergency enough for them to be these huge modular tents for businesses, then why the hell can't you manage a few such similar tents for people who are essentially in an emergency shelter situation? And of course, there was, as I recall, no response whatsoever of any significance from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. There's a difference of standard here. You know, they like to pretend they're doing a good job or they're trying real hard. And Rotkin, our mayor, does exactly the same thing. But he can spend thousands of dollars on relocating 47 campers when he can't use the same money to fix up an area that could be used for two or three times that number of people and needs to be open for there to be a legal place for people to sleep at night for those who are not adept at cop car dodging.
Recall. I think it's recall time.
Well, short of that, in light of the fact that there is a camping ban in the city of Santa Cruz, and now the only legal place for people to sleep has been closed, it seems reasonable and necessary for the city council to extend a moratorium on camping bans until a new campground opens. Otherwise, we're back in the situation where people are sleeping in doorways, sleeping under bridges, pushing shopping carts around town with their belongings because they have no place to store them. They're getting camping tickets, and some of them, after they gather a sufficient number of camping tickets, wind up in jail for the crime of sleeping outdoors. When they're in jail, this costs the taxpayers a great deal more than minimal services if we had just had an open-air shelter, which, as Celia Scott said earlier on at the CCH meeting, a campground is a very inexpensive way of providing services for homeless people if you look on a per capita basis.
Go ahead, Coral.
I think is precisely what the city is trying to convince people of, is that, let me rephrase that, is that camping is, to them, is just not a solution to homelessness. And they really, when they have the power, they're not going to care what people's lives are about. It just seems to me that putting homeless people inside is the main issue, and to get money from HUD or other agencies that are donating money, such as that guy that was there that day, that consultant.
Sergey.
It seems
a poverty pimp from up north, I might add.
That no matter...
I'll chunk it.
If it's less
Thank
expensive
you,
or not, it doesn't seem to matter to them. It just seems that they want to convince people that sleeping outside is wrong. More on that.
Yeah, I think Mushroomy had a comment to make about Mayor Rotkin, who you may remember. We called him on our last show here on Friday, and four campers, Billy, Greg, Dan, and some other folks here, talked to Rotkin and I asked him, look, how about opening up... what if the Citizens Committee tomorrow were to open up the open-air shelter again? Because after all, it has operated for a year and a half without permits, and in the somewhat less than optimum health situation it's been in. I mean, And also, you pointed out that the city council has not voted to give anybody negotiating power, so you can't really close it down, and the council can't really close it down until it has another meeting. And certainly, it's a shelter crisis. You voted a shelter crisis in November, so how about if they open it up, or somebody else, say Lighthouse Field, or open up, or someplace up near the homeless garden project. And what was Rodkin's response, Mushroomic?
I think it was more like, no matter where they put the homeless here in town, I'm not going to stand for it, he said, and that they can't do that.
Get out of town. Get out of my neighborhood. Not in my backyard. These aren't phrases that come sweetly to the image of RoboCop Mike Rodkin, our new mayor. These don't sound like a man who calls himself a socialist and teaches a community studies course up at the University of California. But you must judge an individual by the deeds they do and by what, in fact, policy statements they have ultimately come to stand behind. And Rodkin has come to mean, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, get out of town, campers. Go into the shelters that are open, even though there's an insufficient number and they can't help you if you have pets, and or if you're in couples, or if you have certain late night jobs, you can't get in there. Doesn't matter. We aren't gonna give a damn beyond that. And if somebody else opens up a campground, well, it's not gonna happen until the lengthy permit process is gone through. In essence, it's an emergency, yeah, but it's not our emergency. Our emergency is to get you guys out of here. That's our emergency. So I'm afraid that that's the situation.
I think Mike Rodkin and Councilman Scott Kennedy have sort of caved into the anti-homeless sentiment that we've been seeing dotting the pages of our Sentinel and words coming out of the mouths of certain supervisors.
And let's not forget Celia Scott.
Well, I'm speaking specifically about Scott Kennedy and Mike Rodkin, that in the past they have made comments that seem more favorable towards the needs of homeless people, but what they've been saying lately sounds like that they're fanning the flames of anti-homeless sentiment, that homeless people are homeless because they're somehow deficient. If we provide services for homeless people, then we'll just become a magnet for homeless people across the nation. This is a myth, and